This is a Defocus Media production.
And I remember just cold calling ophthalmologist, just picking up the phone and saying, hey, you know, I'm an optometrist, I've trained in the US and I've done a residency and here's my experience, here's my resume. And, there was a lot of pushback. Some of the ophthalmologists had a lot of questions and some of them were just said, yeah, you know, I don't think this is gonna work, but good luck, see you around.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of the 2020 podcast. I am your host, Dr. Harbir Syan. Thank you again for taking the time to join me here to learn and to grow. Before we get started, don't forget, make sure you hit subscribe, hit like, leave a review, do all of those amazing things that help support the podcast. And as always, I have a wonderful guest I'm super excited to introduce to you. Her name is Dr. Mania Madan. She is the Vice President for the BC Doctors of Optometry, which is our provincial optometry association here in British Columbia. She is a fellow of the American Academy of Optometry. She has lectured and continues to lecture all across North America. And her phone is not on silent.
Sorry about that.
That's okay. That's okay. The last thing I was going to say, she also practices as an OD MD practice and in a busy private practice here in the Vancouver area. Dr. Madan, thank you so much for joining me on the podcast.
Of course. Thank you for having me. Super excited to be here.
This episode is brought to you by Opria Group. Opria Group is a unique Canadian company that not only offers high quality pre-owned optometric equipment at the fraction of retail prices, but they also design and build beautiful offices. Right now you pay $0 for design fees on any renovations or new construction, which could potentially save you thousands of dollars. You can also save 10% on top of already reduced prices of equipment by using the code HS2020. That's right, you could save 10% more by using the code HS2020. Go to opriagroup.com or email info@opriagroup.com, or you can find them on Instagram @opriagroup to learn more. Now back to our episode with Dr. Mania Madan. Well, thank you so much for joining me. Honestly, there's a lot of amazing things that you've been doing lately that I'm super excited to share with our audience. I didn't mention it for some reason in this little intro I just did, but the subtitle is, you know, entrepreneurship, business, life, you know, kind of combining all these different things, not just speaking about optometry specifically, but it's great that you kind of had this rounded sort of personality and profession and everything. I think you have so many different things that you can contribute here. The first thing I want to talk about actually is your position with the BC Doctors of Optometry. Mm-hmm. Congratulations on your re-election as Vice President.
Thank you so much.
Can you tell us, I think it's so important to share, you know, the journey through this, you know, within the organization and what it means to the profession to be involved. So if you could tell us a little bit about how long you've been involved and what that process has been like.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I've been involved with BC Doctors of Optometry for the last 3 years, first as a board member and then got elected to be vice president. I mean, it's such a neat position to be in, right? It really opens up your eyes to the needs of the optometrists across the province. So I've had the opportunity to not meet people just in BC, you know, the various doctors and people on the board, but also across Canada. Mm. So it's been really fascinating to see how optometrists practice throughout Canada. You know, what are their challenges in the regions that they are in and what kind of things that they're facing versus what we're facing here. And so kind of bringing all of that knowledge together and, you know, collaborating and always wanting to move the profession forward. So always advocating. And there's just so much behind the scene work, right, that goes in these organizations. And I think that until you're in that organization and seeing it, you just don't even realize, how many wheels are turning to make sure that we can practice the way we want to practice here.
Yeah, I think that's actually such a great point to make is, often we kind of get busy in our day-to-day lives and practicing the way we practice, and we forget that the profession didn't just show up out of nowhere, and it doesn't just stay here or grow by itself. It's growing because of the efforts of a lot of people and the advocacy and things like that that come through our professional organizations like the BCDO.
And like you said, right, we find a profession and we want to leave it better. We want to leave it better for our children and for the future. And so that's what people did in the past for us, right? And so I think it's really important to be involved in, instead of complaining.
Yes. You know what? Let's be blunt. Okay, I'd like to be a little bit like blunt about this. All right, look, first of all, we have to always remember we stand on the shoulders of the people who come before us, right? And the foundation that they've built for us. So be grateful of that and aware of that. So you're not just like, no, I did this for myself. Well, where we are today is because of the people who came before us. So that's number one. But number two, if you're going to complain about something, there's also the opportunity to do something about it. And so I want to just kind of say that, right, is because there are a lot of times people in all sorts of different professions who will just complain about the fact that the profession is not meeting their needs or expectations. But if that is the case, you know, it's worthwhile stepping out there and doing what you've done and being in these leadership positions to make the change that you'd like to see.
Exactly. And we've got a really great board this year as well. And so I'm really excited that, you know, it's going to be positive. Things are going to be moving in a good direction.
Yeah, absolutely. Really excited about the board that's just been elected. If you don't mind, let's give each of them a quick shout out. Dr. Shiv Sharma, Dr. Lily Liang, and oh my God, Dr. Peter Prippich, right?
That's right. Those were the new electees. And we've got our president, Dr. Aaron Bly.
Of course, Dr. Bly.
President, Dr. John Lam.
Yes.
On there. Yeah, and then Dr. Brittany Rolette, who's in the interior. Also a young mom, you know, putting her time in, contributing. So it's wonderful.
Yeah. You know what? Since you mentioned that, that was going to be a question later on, but I want to jump into that right now. Since you mentioned the mom thing, right? So many, many practicing optometrists, many professional women are moms or want to have families. You yourself are a mother of three.
Yes.
And I'd like to ask you, you know, just to sort of open-ended here, how have you found the balance and how did you approach this starting a family, being a professional?
You know, that's a really great question and I'm glad we're touching on it. I feel like my 30s were a blur, right? With trying to have three kids. We moved back from the United States after being in school and working and then setting up practices here, helping perhaps my husband set up his practice and building a home. So there was a lot going on, you know, with having children. And I think that as women, we maybe even have our own internal battles going on. You know, I went to school, I've got student loans, I want to be working. But here I am nursing and here I am raising babies. Hmm. And, you know, what I've really found now that I am in my 40s, I don't want to admit that, but...
Well, you don't look it. Let me give you that one.
You know, that I think that those are... It's okay to do that. I mean, it's okay to step away from your career and take some time to raise your kids. I heard a quote from Oprah one time and she said, "You can have everything, but just not all at the same time," you know? So, and you want to try to have things that you can't necessarily, they can't come back. Like you can't go back to our children's childhood. Mm. But I feel fortunate that I'm in a profession like optometry where I can take a pause and then come back to it and it's still going to be here and it's still going to support me and I'm still going to support it, you know? Mm. So I feel like even though in the last 5 years, perhaps I took a break and I wasn't so active because my kids were so young, I don't feel like I've missed a beat. Whereas I felt like that when I was taking a break, you know, I would sometimes beat myself over it. Like, hey, I just started this job or, you know, what, you know, I don't want to be taking time off and I want to be advancing in my career. But I think that, yeah, you can have it all. Just, you know, perhaps space it out. And it's okay to do that.
That's a great quote and a great message. Leave it to Oprah to share these pearls of wisdom. So, I mean, I think you've kind of answered a little bit already in that first part of the discussion. But what advice would you have then for women who are in that position, who maybe they're students, maybe new grads, whatever it might be, where they're trying to understand how they might approach that?
You know, my advice is really for one thing, for sure, you've got to figure out the kind of profession you want, right? The kind of career you want. What do you want to get out of your professional life and your career life? And then it's okay that it doesn't have to happen right away. We've got to have patience. And you might have children that you might want to take care of. You might have a sick family member, right? That that we might be taking care of our parents or whatever the reason is. You know, as long as you have passion And it doesn't usually go in a straight line. You know, we're not just advancing in a linear fashion, and there can be up and downs in life, and that's just what it is. Mm-hmm. But be clear on what you really want out of life, what you want out of your profession. You're going to be spending so many hours in it. So, you know, just have that clear vision, and I think things will fall into place when it's the right time.
That's awesome advice. And I often do like to kind of highlight the fact that it's almost never a straight line. You know, as much as we like to picture coming out of school, this is my path.
Exactly.
I don't know. It's almost never. I would imagine it's almost never that going to be that way, right? There's always going to be twists and turns. And so being open to that. And like you said, you know, understanding that you can have everything you want, maybe just not all at the same time, and prioritizing those things. And I do think that coming from my male perspective, I apologize, but like that our profession, optometry is a profession that at least gives quite a bit of flexibility in that, versus maybe some others that are less flexible. And since we're, you know, sort of on the topic, I'd like to, you know, I've been so fortunate to have so many amazing women on the podcast, professionals, successful in whatever areas they're in. But I don't want to ignore the fact that there's likely been some additional challenges for these women to get to where they are, you know, based on gender inequality and bias and things like that. So first, if there is anything like that, I feel like I'm getting into the heavy stuff right off the top. Yeah. Right? This is usually saved for later in the podcast, but we're on the topic, so I'm just going to do it. Okay. If there's any experiences you've had that you'd be comfortable sharing, you don't have to, but more importantly, I'd like to know from your perspective, you know, do you feel like, are we heading in the right direction? What do you think we need to see a bit more of that in our profession or just across the board?
You know, I think from my experience, I've been pretty blessed. I've, you know, had a supportive husband that has, you know, said, hey, it's your career. You know, you tell me how to support you. People that I've worked with in the United States and the practices and here, I think they've all been very supportive of the choices that I wanted to make. I think more than anything, it was probably my own internal battles, right? And maybe they come from what is expected of us and what the society puts on us, even though people around me, you know, didn't enforce those expectations on me. But I think at some level, as a woman, you feel the mom guilt, you feel the work guilt, and you feel all these guilts, and perhaps we are putting it on ourselves too. Maybe we have to start to change our own mindset and feel better and comfortable with our choices that we're making, and that things are going to be fine. But no, I don't have a specific experience to share. So yeah, I feel really blessed that it's been positive.
That's great. No, that's great. And not that there has to be one, but you know, it's just like, I think it's helpful to, when each person who comes on, if they share their own story, someone out there will resonate with a piece of your story, maybe that they didn't resonate with somebody else's. And that's perfectly fine. You know, another thing, I like to make these little segues where I can, right? So you talked about the choices that you made and the decisions that you made. So we'll go back into kind of your professional career now. You chose to do a residency. I'd love to hear a bit about your residency. Where were you? What did you practice? And you know, was doing a residency, in your opinion, the right choice for you? And would you recommend it to someone else?
Yeah. So I feel like my journey was definitely a little bit different. So I graduated from Pacific University College of Optometry back in, you know, just a couple of years ago. And then I worked in Minnesota at a beautiful private practice. It was a, you know, multi-location private practice, and just a wonderful group of doctors. And I know that I probably would have had the opportunity to buy in, you know, at some point if I wanted to. And it was one of those, you know, high-end great practice that I could see myself working in. Mm-hmm. But a couple of years into practicing, you know, I realized that it's one of those questions you have to ask yourself, hey, am I happy? Is this how I want my career to go? You know, and I think anybody would have been happy. You know, it was a great practice. But I felt like I was missing something. So I really wanted to go back to school and do a residency. So after 3 years of practice is when I applied for a residency.
That's amazing.
And it was an ocular disease. And, you know, being a Canadian, it's a huge step. When you're living in the States, you've got all these visa stuff to go through and to be able to even get a residency. And then you're competing with, you know, all these wonderful new grads that are coming out. Mm. And not to mention, I was just newly married and living comfortably, and my husband was still going to school. And, you know, and I didn't match in Minnesota. I matched in Texas.
Oh, wow.
And so that was another layer of, hey, am I going to do this? Or, you know, should I just back out of it? But nope, decided that if this is my career, I want it on my own terms. And if I want to go to school and I want to learn a little bit more about what my passion is, then I want to do it. Yeah. And it was just the most wonderful experience. So we packed our bags, moved to Texas. And I mean, come on, you get to live in another great place, right? And I worked at, so my residency was at a large practice in Texas. It was a referral center for other eye care professionals to refer their patients for eye care. And, so just kind of got to work alongside, four wonderful ophthalmologists trained in glaucoma, retina, and cornea, and refractive surgery, and be on call every other weekend and see 30, 40 patients, and, kind of be involved in the care of the patient from start to end. You see newly diagnosed glaucoma to end stage glaucoma and infections and cancer and just everything in between. Mm-hmm. And so just a really, wonderful experience that compact with learning that I think would take years to learn, and to see in private practice, I guess.
Yeah.
And so all these years later, I still feel like that was probably one of the, amazing experiences of my life and investment in myself.
That's amazing to hear you had such like a profound experience. I feel like really, but to do it 3 years after already having graduated is a whole other story, right? Most people are thinking about doing it right after school, of course.
Yes.
And so I'm going to take it that you would generally recommend new grads go into residency. Would I be correct about that?
Absolutely. 100%. I think that it's such a phenomenal experience, no matter what your interest in, is, if it's myopia control, it's ocular disease, it's contact lens, just do it. It's another year and you're just going to make such great connections and come out with such a great experience. And, and even if it is a year or two later, it could still happen. You can do it.
Yeah. Well, clearly. Yeah. So don't ever, that's a perfect example of the fact that like, just because it's not the usual time or whatever the time that most people do, it doesn't mean you can't do it. If that's what you want to do. And clearly it was well worth it.
Yes.
So after the residency, then did you stay in the US for a while or did you come back?
Yeah, I did. Yeah. I stayed in Minnesota. So we moved back to Minnesota and I worked at a large, kind of an optometry ophthalmology practice, kind of in an integrated care model, which, I really feel like there's a huge benefit in that kind of care. And so I was working there for a few years before we moved back to Canada. And that was a huge change. I think when I came back to Canada in 2013 or so, I think BC was just getting therapeutics, or perhaps therapeutics to treat dry eyes and glaucoma, right, at that time. And I remember coming from a state like Minnesota, where you had rights to even treat chalazions with injections, doing orals, to coming back to just at the very start of therapeutics was a really interesting time to come back to BC. I was grateful that the profession of optometry was advancing here and then that was opening up, so that was really wonderful. So when I came back here and just with my experience in the States and the residency, and I really wanted to work with an ophthalmology group. I wanted to practice to the fullest scope possible of my optometric license. And I felt, this is working so well in the States and I was happy there and perhaps I can try that here. And it was really difficult. I don't think that there were any practices at that time that were really working with an optometrist in a fully kind of integrated fashion. And I remember just cold calling ophthalmologists, just picking up the phone and saying, hey, I'm an optometrist. I've trained in the US and I've done a residency and here's my experience. Here's my resume. Do you think we can get together for a coffee and perhaps we can see if this would be a good fit? And, there was a lot of pushback. Some of the ophthalmologists had a lot of questions. They're really surprised that somebody would just pick up the phone and call. So that was really interesting. And some of them would just said, I don't think this is going to work, but good luck. See you around. And, finally found a group with Dr. Kevin Wade that we got chatting about it. And I think he saw the potential and I saw the potential in that. And so we've started working together back in 2014.
All right, guys, I wanted to give another shout out to our friends at Opria Group. Now, if you happen to be a medical practitioner in a different field, not an optometrist, Opria Group has a sister company called Medico Construction, which also builds all sorts of different medical practices, whether you're a veterinarian, a dentist, a medical doctor, whatever it might be. reach out to Medico Construction for all your design and build needs. You can find them on social media at team.medico, or you can email them at info@medicoconstruction.com. And now back to our episode with Dr. Mania Madan.
Wow. Okay. I didn't realize it'd been that long. That's really cool.
Yeah. So, and it's been such a great experience. And I remember when I first started working there, and he said to me, he said, okay, Mania, you're here. You know, you wanted to work with an ophthalmology practice. You're here. Now what? What are we going to do?
That's great.
And he said, you know, what kind of career do you want? What is your profession going to be like? What are we going to do here? You know, what is it that you want? And I thought that was a really cool, question that he asked me because we talked about, hey, I could do pre and post-op care. And he said, I don't need you for that. We're going to do something bigger. Yeah. That's the whole point of this. It's not just this pre and post-op care that you talk about. He said, and what is that going to be? And so that's when I really learned that, what I really want out of this profession is mutual respect, right? Mm-hmm. For each other. I want, I want us to learn from each other. I want us to both push our professions forward, right? And then provide this integrated care where we provide really good quality patient care, where he depends on things that I can do and I depend on him for things that he can do. Mm. I think we all kind of win in that situation.
That's amazing. So a lot of credit to Dr. Wade for being that open, right? I think that's really amazing on his part to be that open to that discussion with you and not just like, yeah, here's the pre and post-op. Because that's, I think, the way in BC, I know any ODs listening in the US would kind of be like, they're not sure, maybe not understanding the fact that here in BC, this ODMD situation working together is very uncommon, at best, or rare maybe is a more appropriate term. And in the cases where they do have that, I think most often would think of them as more as pre and post, and the few odds and ends that the MD maybe won't do, not in a demeaning manner, I'm not trying to say that, but that's often the way it's set up. But for Dr. Wade to kind of be like, you come in and let's just like, you do all of this and I'll take care of this. And that's pretty cool.
Exactly. And I said to him, I do want to practice with the fullest of my scope. And he said, well, you're not going to do that by just doing pre and post-op care.
That's right. So that's amazing.
Let's figure this out. Like, how can we move this forward? Like, what is our goal here? And I think that we've always had that in mind, that we want to be forefront of that and maybe lead the way in that.
Yeah. We're going to touch on something that you are leading the way in just a second, but I wanted to also give you the credit for doing the cold calling, right? So this is something that I have stressed in various areas of my career, right? So when I first started practicing, I think I took the non-traditional route of like doing the same thing, cold calling optometrists and saying like, hey, I like your practice. I like your setup, whatever. Can I potentially work there? And having those conversations, those are uncomfortable conversations to have with people who are not expecting you to call them out of the blue. And then when I had started my eyewear branding, I was doing the same thing. I was cold calling anybody I could think of that it might be relevant to. And a lot of them were not expecting the phone call or that type of phone call. And you just got to be willing to have that conversation. So really cool that you did that.
It's amazing that you did that too. And, there's so much learning out of that. But you're really putting yourself in a tough spot. A lot of it's rejection. Mm-hmm. But when it's not, it's really good.
Yeah. And then you find opportunities that somebody else wouldn't find, right, through the traditional channels. So really cool, really cool. So, you practice in a private practice as well as a big, busy practice. We can touch on that a little bit, but since we're already talking about Dr. Wade's clinic and you having kind of set this relationship up and trying to be at the forefront of things, you are doing a lot of dry eye treatment. That's kind of your specialty. And within that, you're doing something that is very much cutting edge, which is the PRP. So we'll work our way down this. First of all, how did you decide that dry eye was kind of your passion? And then, how did you work on building that within Dr. Wade's existing practice?
Yeah, no, it's always been a thing that I've always enjoyed treating, right? So dry eyes. And I really believe that dry eye is an optometry disease. It's something that we can manage fully. I think that it is something that optometrists can really take control of and be it their thing. So it's something I've always really enjoyed. And in the last 5-6 years, I think as the practice was shaping, the dry eye area really started to grow. And so I think Dr. Wade was seeing the benefits of you know, me seeing those patients. And then, of course, from the patient's perspective as well, you know, things were really changing. And so that's kind of where we decided, hey, you know, maybe this is something we need to look into it and make it a formal program. And so, you know, I decided to do a lot of staff training at the clinic just to kind of change the mindset. Because as you know, in Canada, especially in BC, in an ophthalmology practice, we're in socialized medicine, right? Mm-hmm. There isn't a fee for service. There isn't, hey, you know, you've got to pay for something like this. And there's nothing wrong with paying for things. It's a mindset, right? It's just not something that the patients are expecting, not what the staff is expecting, and not something even the ophthalmologists are sometimes comfortable talking about, right? Because that's just not part of the education. So there was a lot of education that went along with that. You know, I remember one of the simple challenges were things like, sometimes I'd hear one of the ophthalmologists say, yeah, you could just do lid scrubs with baby shampoo.
Yeah. Great.
And I'd really have to knock on the door and be like, mm-hmm,
yeah. No. You're like barging into the exam room like, no. That's awesome.
Yeah. So we've really come to a point, you know, that I think that the whole clinic sees the benefit of a well kind of a dry eye, you know, program where patients are benefiting and you know, the ophthalmologists see it. So it's been wonderful.
That's awesome. That's awesome. So tell us the thing that you've posted about a lot on social media. That's right. My attention, and it's gotten a lot of like key people's attention, you know. For example, I don't know if you heard the episode or not, but I had Dr. Richard Maharaj on recently. And so he's the dry eye Jedi, right? So that's his specialty. That's what he focuses on day in, day out. And even he and I were chatting on that podcast about, you know, the up and coming cool things are happening, and they're happening in Canada. And your name, of course, came up, you know, your use of PRP. So, tell us, please, for the uninitiated in this topic, what is PRP? How do you make it?
Yeah.
And how has it been beneficial?
Absolutely. So PRP is platelet-rich plasma. So it's basically, in very simple words, it's just your concentrated platelets that are within our blood, right? So our blood has many components, and we just concentrate the platelets, and it's called platelet-rich plasma. And so the reason we concentrate the platelets is that platelets are the powerhouses for healing, okay? Mm-hmm. So a lot of studies show that they carry alpha granules and many other bioavailable molecules within our platelets. In fact, 1,600 bioavailable molecules are within our platelets that come to a site of injury and rescue it. So basically, they are involved in wound healing, so healing the tissue very quickly. They're involved in reducing the osmolarity, which, as you know, in dry eye disease, our osmolarity is very high, right? And so they can correct the osmolarity. They provide anti-inflammatory cytokines to help heal the tissue in the area. They also provide anti-analgesic effects, so to reduce the pain. And there's some evidence that there is nerve regeneration that happens with our own platelets. So it's been really fascinating working with platelet-rich plasma, right? The thought came actually from my husband. He's a periodontist, and dentists work with platelets, right? Mm-hmm. In fact, so many areas of medicine work with platelets. There's so much evidence in orthopedic care, right? And in dermatology and in hair restoration, where platelets are injected to the site of injury to help, you know, increase healing in that area. And so that's kind of where the idea came. And so we've kind of brought that into our clinic a couple of years ago, and we've used it on so many patients. I mean, I think there's also a need for patients wanting to use more natural options, right? PRP contains nothing else but your own blood and your own platelets. So there's no drugs in it. There's no preservatives in it. There's no additives in it. You know, we're all very conscious of what we're putting inside our bodies now, right? Whether it's the food that we eat or whether it's, you know, a medication that we take, we want to try avoiding and try doing as many natural things as possible. So I think, you know, so I think in that it really meets that part of the practice. And also we've just seen such phenomenal results with platelet-rich plasma. Patients use it 4 times a day. So we do the blood draw in the clinic, and then we centrifuge the blood and concentrate the platelets and then put them in bottles for them to use as eye drops. Yeah.
That's wow. Like, to me, mind blowing, like that you've developed this whole protocol within the office, you know, yourself. So who does the process of the centrifuging and bottling and that type of thing?
I've got a medical technologist that comes and does that. Yeah. And so we did a bunch of research a couple of years ago, looked at, you know, studies, looked at the optimal platelet concentration, looked at different mm-hmm. blood draws and how much, you know, platelets are in people's blood. And then you're, you know, kind of working with, you need a certain volume when you need to have drops that have got to last, you know, 4 months. You need to be able to draw a certain amount of blood. You need to be able to get a certain amount of platelets out of it. You need to have a certain amount of volume. It can't be too thick. It's got to come out of the bottle. And then also retaining, you know, the bioavailability of these platelets so that they're not degraded over time. Mm-hmm. So there was a lot of studies or a lot of, I guess, experimentation that kind of went into developing, you know, the method to make sure that we are getting good viable platelets, you know, consistent.
Yeah, that's very cool. And so is it using like a little dropper or is it coming out of a regular
drop? Yeah. Do you know those, you know, those vitamin E, like an amber glass bottle with a dropper?
Yep.
So that's what, yeah, because platelets actually stick to plate to plastic. So they have to be stored in a glass bottle.
Very cool.
And then the amber color protects them from oxidation.
Well, that was going to be my next question then, is how do you prevent it from oxidation or other types of degradation over time? Does it have to be refrigerated? Because you said it's not preserved.
It does. It's not preserved. So it does have to be refrigerated between use. And then the bottles that are not being used need to be frozen.
Frozen. Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Incredible stuff. And so where would somebody need to look if they wanted to learn more about this? Should they reach out to you or are there other resources?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, one of the other things I really want to do is I want to make this accessible for other optometrists and for other patients. And so I've always reached out to other optometrists and I've said that, hey, this doesn't need to be any more complicated than writing a prescription for Restasis or Xiidra or any other eye drop. You know, you can simply write a prescription for PRP eye drops and we have it set up at our clinic where patients can come and just fill that prescription. Do you know what I mean? Okay. So we don't, you know, they don't need to see me. They don't need to see, you know, so you are the managing doctor, you're managing their dry eye disease. And this is just another tool in your toolbox. Yeah. Should you want to use it for your patients, it's there. Yeah.
That's incredible. That's a great, great resource to offer to people. So something you touched on and something I wanted to ask you about, you know, related to these types of dry eye treatments, whether it's IPL, radio frequency, PRP, there's a cost associated with it.
Yes.
And, you know, one thing that is tends to be a bit of an obstacle, not just for the patient, but for the doctor, even to have these treatments available to offer them to patients is the cost. And so if you could, like, would you encourage an optometrist to approach this and how do you go about it? Are there any certain things that you have or, you know, mentality or approach to this that you have that helps you kind of look past that?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think there's another quote that I love, is that people don't buy what you sell. They buy what you believe in, right? They often buy what you believe in. So you've got to believe that, you've got to practice science-based medicine. Mm-hmm. So it's got to have, you know, some backing to it before we can prescribe it to our patients. And then when we do, we want to make sure that's something I would do for myself. That's something that I would do to my mom, right? I would prescribe for my mom. I've got to get to that comfort level because people aren't buying what you're selling. They really are buying what you believe in. And if this is something that you believe in, and if you've got compassion for it and you've got science behind it, I think that really helps.
Yeah, I think that's really important, actually. It's a great way to approach it. Let's touch on this briefly. So you do also work in a private practice. And I'd love to hear if you were able to list like two or three pros and cons of each, you know, the ODMD setting versus the private practice. If there's somebody out there who is, you know, considering this or trying to figure out which path may be the more appropriate path for them, how would you separate those two? What are the kind of the pros and cons of each?
Absolutely. That's a great question. You know, of course, every mode of practice has its pros and cons, right? I love working at the OMD practice. I think I get to practice full scope for sure. There are so many things that, you know, that come very easy, whether it's ordering lab work or being involved in care, you know, for a chronic disease with another doctor. All of those things are definitely easier. Do you know what I mean? Or more speedy. Unfortunately, I say that because I think that should be easier in an optometry practice too. But perhaps we're not there yet, and hopefully, you know, we can bridge that gap and get there. But it is heavy work. I mean, I feel you're constantly seeing sick patients. You're constantly seeing patients, you know, with a real visual impairment. And so it can be very heavy days. They're very condensed, fast, heavy days, right? I love working in a private practice as well, where I get to see families and you get to grow old with them and you get to see their children. I love seeing patients that are my age, that are young professionals, and then providing care for them and you know, advocating for preventing eye diseases in the future, whether it is to say, hey, you know, we've got to start early on your dry eye stuff, or, you know, whatever it is, you know, that they're going through. And so that's really fascinating as well. And I love that balance of having both of those practices in there. And I also love that, you know, at this point, and then there was a time where I felt I wanted to be a business owner, right? And that was, you know, when you come out of school and you've got these loans and whatnot. And I thought, you know, if I can't do it my way, I don't know if I'll be happy. And I'm happy to report 10 years later that I'm happy with my mode of practice.
That's excellent. I'm very, very happy to hear that. And I think that, you know, if I could just throw in my two cents here, I think many of us have this sort of feeling, well, I need to be a business owner to be successful or feel accomplished or whatever. But now 10 years later for me, I could tell you that that's not necessary, you know, in business ownership comes with, does your husband own his own practice?
He does. Yes.
Yeah, so you see it, you've seen it. Like, I know you've been involved in that, right? So you understand business ownership comes with its challenges, many challenges. And you know, there's many days where I'm like, man, this would just be, if I could just practice like optometry and just help my patients and not have to also think about this other thing, life would probably feel a little bit more fulfilled, you know, but there's pros and cons to both. Some people want some of that, some people don't. And it's good to hear. It's really good to hear that you feel, you know, fulfilled and accomplished and for good reason, you know, in the settings that you're currently working in. So.
Absolutely. And you're right. I mean, I think being a practice owner, I mean, that's amazing too. And I can't imagine the amount of doors that opens for them and, you know, the connections that that draws. And so, yeah, in the end, you just really have to ask what kind of profession I want. I think that's a really, really important question before we just dive into and just clock in our hours, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You've really got to decide what we want at the end of the day. I want to be able to look back and say, hey, was I happy with that? You know, was that a good choice for me?
Yeah, that old, what do you call, rocking chair test.
Right? Yeah.
Think about yourself as like an 80-year-old, 90-year-old person sitting in a rocking chair.
Yes. And you know what, I think what else is really amazing is that that can change in a decade too. I mean, what I wanted 10 years ago is so different from what I want now. Mm. So I think that's self-evaluation from time to time. And it's okay if we change the type of practice we want. And maybe in 10 years, I'll be a practice owner. I don't know.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's it's also very, very sage advice is not to just because you've picked one path now, it doesn't have to be your path. If you've grown and you've changed, then reevaluate. So awesome. Thank you so much for all those amazing insights. Now, I have a few kind of rapid fire questions for you as we kind of lead into wrapping up the podcast. Amazing. So we're going to do these. Now, these are supposed to be short answer, you know, one word to one sentence kind of thing. Whatever comes to mind, I want this to kind of be, you know, quick. All right. But the question itself might be a little bit long. I'm going to start with the first question. Okay, do you, if there was a dry eye war, like if you've watched the Avengers, there's like somebody coming from out of the planet and they're waging a dry eye war on us. What would be the one weapon you would choose to fight this dry eye villain?
IPL.
All right. You're going to intense pulse light him into submission. I got it. IPL. Good.
I feel like it's going to be cool. You know?
Yeah, it probably would be too. It's like the brightest flashing. I got it. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Versus like a lid scrub or something would be a lot harder to kill them. Okay. So what is the biggest lesson you've learned through COVID?
Wow. That's hard to answer in a one word. One sentence. What have I learned? You know, what I've really learned is the growth that we can have when we're in such a different time. Just as an example, I started Instagramming this year, which I never did before and never even thought about. Yeah. But with everything kind of closed and not having opportunity to connect with your peers and, you know, and perhaps conferences, I felt like perhaps social media would be an avenue. And so, yeah, it's amazing, you know, different times and how they make us grow. So I think when I think of COVID, I really think of growth.
Yeah, that's great. And I'm glad that you think of that. Hopefully many others do as well. There's obviously easy negative takeaways, but if there's a positive like that, that's great. Who's the most influential person early in your professional career?
My husband.
All right. That's awesome. And what's the best professional advice you have ever received?
The best professional advice I've ever received is to reevaluate and align your goals with what you want out of life, out of your professional life.
Okay. That's excellent. That's excellent. And I'll just throw this last one in. What are your kids' names and how old are they? Tell us a little bit about them.
I've got three kids. I've got Avia. She's 3 years old. I've got Ronan. He's a boy at 6. And then my older one is Jeevan at 9.
Okay. That's awesome. Yeah. 3, 6, 9. That's great. Yeah. Like the Omegas.
That's good. I like that.
All right. Well, they won't be there forever. So you could use that for now and give me credit next time you use
it. I love that. Right. Thank you.
The two final questions, if you've heard a previous podcast, you might've heard this, but there's two questions I like to ask every guest at the end of each episode. And they're sort of self-reflective questions. And the first one is, if we could hop in a time machine and go back to a point in your life that was maybe a difficult time, and what advice would you share with yourself if you could tell us that? You could share that moment if you'd like, but more importantly, what advice would you share with yourself?
You know, I think some of the difficult times are often when we're conflicted within ourselves, right? I mean, this is Mental Health Awareness Week as well. So sometimes they don't have to be physical challenges that the world is putting on us, but just our inner challenges where we're trying to battle, we're trying to find our place of where things are in life, right? And whether it's balancing career, balancing life, balancing kids. And so I feel like probably my hardest, you know, time where I just kind of battled with what my position was in life was probably in my 30s. And I think just looking back and then now, you know, looking into having things settled down, I think it's just way of life. It's just growth, right? We learn from our hard times, we stretch, and then we just look forward to being at peace with it, I guess.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. And the final question is, of everything that you've achieved and accomplished, how much of it would you say is due to luck and how much is due to hard work?
I do remember you asking this question to other guys.
Yeah.
You know, I think that hard work is so important. I think that being open to rejection, being open to, you know, picking up the phone and cold calling, knowing that 100 people are going to say no, and, you know, maybe one will say yes, and putting yourself out there. I mean, I think that's all hard work. I think, of course there's luck as well. I think, I think it's a bit of both, but we cannot, the only thing we can control is hard work. You know, we cannot control luck. So we got to do what we can do on our part and just hope for the best.
Yeah, that's so true. That's so true. And yeah, for sure, putting yourself out there like you did, that definitely falls under the hard work category. Yeah. And you wouldn't be, you know, where you are if you hadn't done that. So thank you very much for sharing that. And finally then, how can people get in touch with you if they would like to do that?
Absolutely. You can get in touch with me on my new Instagram page.
Yes. Excellent. Fantastic Instagram page, by the way.
Thank you. Thank you. It's a work in progress. I don't know how you do it, but I'm definitely learning so much about it. And then, or through my website, it's called Vancouver Eye Doctor, dr.ca. Via the Instagram, that would be wonderful.
So Vancouver, EYEDR.
Yes.
.ca.
UIEDR.ca.
Yeah. Yes. And I have visited your website multiple times and I love the content on there, and you talk about PRP and some of the stuff as well. Absolutely. So if anybody's looking for some information, but definitely, you know, reach out on Instagram. I find these days kind of the easiest way to get in touch with people, right?
Yes. It's a little bit more casual, right? I love it.
That's great. That's great. Well, thank you again, Dr. Madan. Thank you so much for being on the podcast. I truly appreciate all your insight and all the advice that you've shared. And
thank you.
Thank you, everybody who's tuned in, whether you're watching on YouTube, listening on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. Don't forget to hit subscribe and hit like and leave a comment, leave a review. And we will be back with you back with another episode. I've done this like 50 times. I still can't get it right. And we'll be back with another episode. And I'll probably get it wrong the next time as well. I'll see you guys later.